Hi, everyone. This is John Frank, Editorial Director of PL Buyer, welcoming you to this latest PL Buyer podcast. This podcast is one in a series we're doing with Patrick Rodmel, President and CEO of One International, a Toronto-based integrated retail agency with more than 40 years of experience in more than 40 countries. Patrick also is a guest columnist with PL Buyer and has been co-chairing our new Best of Design Excellence Awards, recognizing the best in private label package design. Today we'll be discussing Patrick's 10 keys to private brand success, the topic of the columns he's been writing for PL Buyer this year. Specifically, we'll be looking at key number 9, how to market like a national brand. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be with you, John.
Great to have you, as always. Let's begin by setting the scene, as we do in each of these, in case we have listeners who haven't heard some of the earlier podcasts. Give us the thinking that led you to the 10 keys. What can our readers and our listeners here learn from them?
Well, John, it's an exercise that's 30 years in the making. We started learning about private label, a long time ago, essentially from working in Europe, in fact, where we all recognize the take rates and the adaptation of private label has generally been ahead of those practices in North America. Mm-hmm. So since that time, over the history of our business, we've worked with over 100 retailers, and wow, through all that, we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to putting private label together, and in fact also in the many different ways that people approach the development of their private label, from shooting from the hip to what we call analysis paralysis. So what can people learn, you say? What can people learn about from the 10 keys? Mm-hmm. It's really a framework for effective decision making. That's what we're trying to do. Is it's not so much about the right way, there's a right way and a wrong way, as much as the 10 keys kind of help to set a canvas for the retailer to paint or define their own private label. So it's really up to them to paint the picture of success in the way they can, using the 10 keys as a foundation for that.
Great, and you're giving them the benefit of your world experience to do that.
Well, hopefully. You know, as I say, you learn a lot from both doing things properly and also from your mistakes. So we're happy to share both sides of the coin through this exercise, too. So,
okay. Well, today we're looking at key number 9, which is called Market Like a National Brand. And I feel, in reading all these, I felt like all the other keys were building up to this one. Is this the ultimate message in your 10 keys?
Well, it's a good question, John, and I wouldn't say that it's, if you will, the ultimate message. Each key is kind of a building block, that has an impact on success. So, for example, if one of the keys are missing, marketing might not even be that important. So, if you kind of step back for a second and think about that, private label needs trial, and marketing supports trial. So in other words, the product sitting on the shelf, what's the way that someone's going to be motivated to pick the product off the shelf? Well, marketing is certainly a key to helping to do that. But that being said, if product quality isn't managed, which is, of course, key number 2 of our series of 10 keys, if product quality isn't there, then the marketing can be wasted because you try it once and you're not going to get any repeat sales. Mm-hmm. So marketing really is kind of the definition of the moment of truth, that's for sure. But if you haven't got the building blocks behind the other keys, it really is a kind of a wasted investment.
Mm. I'm thinking retailers would see this and their first reaction would be, we don't have the marketing dollars national brands have. How can we do that? How would you respond to that?
Well, John, I hear that statement quite often, but it's kind of like what I say to my wife quite often. I say, I don't have time to exercise, right? Mm-hmm. What I'm really saying is that I don't put the time or the effort into something because I don't see the appreciation for the benefit that I get out the other end of it. Mm-hmm. Saying you don't have money is essentially saying that I don't believe that those funds are producing an ROI for our business. If a CFO is convinced, if a CFO of a business is convinced that spending a dollar will help us make $1.50, then it's worthwhile spending it. So you can always find money for the things that demonstrate that they have an ROI. I don't think it's so much a question of not having the money. It's that, frankly, historically, there's been a problem in demonstrating that the investment in marketing has been worthwhile. Mm-hmm. If you can't demonstrate that it's worthwhile, then everyone kind of gets gun-shy to spend. So, In our minds, it's about getting better at marketing so that the payoff can be demonstrated in the investment.
Those are all great points, and you're right. If you can see a reason to do it, then it's much easier to find the money to do it, isn't there?
They talk too as well, you know, that one of the material differences between the price advantage of private label, I mean, let's, you know, cards on the table, that's one of the distinct advantages is you're trying to offer, certainly for national brand equivalent lines of product, you're offering a national brand equivalent at a lower price, and certainly national brand marketing funds are a material part of that price differentiation. You know, the money that brands spend on marketing is in fact one of the things that contribute to the price differentiation. Dave Nichol, the famous leader of Loblaws, used to call that part of the brand tax, which I thought was an interesting kind of description for where that money comes from.
Right, you touched on that in your column. Can you explain what that is briefly?
Yeah. The brand tax is essentially, you know, that why pay more for a product of equal quality simply for the benefit of being promoted to you. So that was essentially the message, the historic message, you know, frankly, that we worked on with Loblaws was defining their brands as really being the ambassador for the consumer. Why pay more if you don't have to? And the difference in the price between the national brand and the private brand, we call it the brand tax. All of the elements of that go into building a price that's frankly more than what the consumer should have to pay for a product. So.
Okay. You mentioned in your column Loblaws and its summer promotion, Canada's biggest barbecue event. Tell us about that and tell us about the lessons in that for other private label retailers.
Well, it really was. For anyone who hasn't looked at that as an example of marketing of private brands, I really encourage taking a look. And, in fact, anyone listening to the podcast, we've got a bit of a case study on that. I'd be happy to send it to you if you want to get my email and send that on. But the taking a look at what Loblaws did last summer for their barbecue event really does kind of paint the picture of what we consider to be a very strong case study for what needed to happen. It was a cross-Canada tasting tour with TV ads, a contest, a special flyer built all around the introduction of 200 new private label items within the overall business. So a great example of using private brands and the sort of momentum around marketing activities to build momentum for the overall retailer. So I'm not saying it was perfect, you know, but it's definitely a very integrated approach and getting a lot closer to the kind of marketing that, frankly, national brands do when they're launching new products and launching new brands. So a great case study to look at.
We've seen a lot of marketing this year in the U.S. from Safeway and its Open Nature line television commercials, which you rarely see for a private label, a great many PR events around the country. It seems like Safeway is taking a brand approach in terms of its marketing for that as well.
Absolutely, you know, and that's just another great example. You know, using things like television promotion to build the unique products that you offer within the store, it has all the logical foundations of traditional marketing practices. What we're doing is we're differentiating our business by highlighting unique items that you can only get at this store. So driving destination, driving loyalty, and building, frankly, a unique position for the overall business. So private labels being used as primary vehicles for mass media advertising is something that we fully support and endorse as an idea to build that kind of awareness overall for the retail business. So a great example.
You mentioned some other retailers in your column as well. What do they have in common in terms of how they're marketing? Is it this integrated approach we've been talking about, an integrated marketing campaign?
Integration is one of the true keys. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing some kind of television ad that speaks a message or creates an impression, and then when you get to the store, that message isn't reinforced at the point of purchase. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, you know, integration is fundamental to leveraging. You know, if you an integrated campaign just naturally gets more value out of the money you spend in it. The businesses that we've seen, that we benchmark and watch, Wegmans, H.E. Budd, and Publix, one thing that they have in common is not only a commitment to building their private brands and promoting their private brands, but also having very strong brand equity scores for the overall retail business. There's a direct correlation you can find between businesses that promote and have strong private brands and the strength of the brand itself, the equity of the retailer itself. So great businesses to look at as far as the practices they do, not only their commitment to the marketing of their brands, but the way they actually do it, all the way from outside the store to the inside.
Okay. Now, you bring up the idea of funding support from suppliers of private label. I'm sure that's raised a few eyebrows from the suppliers.
Yep.
Sure the retailers like the thought of that, but can that happen? Do you see that really happening? Is it happening anywhere?
You know, I believe, John, I firmly believe in this. It really gets down to the concept of the win-win, you know, is that a supplier that participates in a private brand, you know, there's always the considerations of paying for packaging and things of that nature. But if you believe that marketing can sell more product, then everybody wins when marketing is done effectively. And getting full circle back, I think part of the reason there is that sort of the raising eyebrows to suppliers funding private label marketing is that they look at what's happened historically with marketing of private label, and it really doesn't have you know, the great track record of demonstrating results. So the problem is if it's seen as simply another cash grab from the retailer, from the supplier, then that's one thing. But if you can build the credibility and behind the marketing efforts of the business, like, as you mentioned, what Safeway's doing, then suppliers should be eager to support the funding of that, because at the end of the day, you know, pooling supplier funds to promote private brand, if you sell more cookies in private label, it's going to naturally help sell more cereal, you know, within the private brand.
That's a good point. I mean, we've seen consolidation on the supplier side, and I know earlier in the year we wrote about a report from Rabobank in Europe predicting a lot more supplier consolidation. As private label suppliers get larger, do you think it'll be more likely they'll put this funding support behind private label?
I think so, John. You know, there's an interesting correlation here to what we talk about in earlier keys, which is about managing effective pricing strategies. And it amazes me looking at retailers that although there is developing science around the price differentiation needed to get someone to switch from a national brand to a private label, there isn't really as much on that front as you would think, the science behind the price differentials that need to be in place. So, roundabout way of saying, we believe that there's more wiggle room for price for price gap narrowing with national brands than is currently in the marketplace. And then taking some of that additional gross up of pricing and investing in marketing is a strategy that we are certainly advocating to our clients. You know?
And you've done some original research with your firm on what people perceive as the price gap or the advantage they get from private labeling one store versus another, and you actually wrote a column for us that's going to be in our November issue on that topic. But that relates to this, doesn't it?
Absolutely, John. The brand perception study that's taking a look at what the perceived difference is in all kinds of attributes, but pricing being one of them. It was amazing for us to see that the perceived difference in private label pricing between businesses was significantly more than the reality of the actual pricing in most cases. So it begs the question, are people really doing price comparisons on a global scale of product selection, or is it really when I look at the Coke and I look at the Coca-Cola or Pepsi and I look at the private label alternative, is that the decision happening on a more of a micro level? So price perception is a huge part of a marketing strategy for a business. And overall, we're finding that, you know, as I say, there's some money in there that can be used to fund the growth of the brand.
So do you think we'll see a marketing of private label evolve in North America to where it's being marketed like a national brand? And is that a near-term prospect, a long-term prospect? I'll do some predicting here.
Well, the uncertainty in the economy right now is really having an impact. You know, we felt we were in a recession and then out of one, and right now people, I'm not even sure if the term recession matters as much as just the uncertainty that still clouds over the overall economic climate.
Mm-hmm.
In that context, and when you're not seeing a lot of GDP and consumer spending growth, many retailers are looking at, you know, cost cutting as ways to find, improving their bottom lines.
Mm-hmm.
So getting that funding, getting that marketing funding for businesses is going to be difficult to do when everybody's looking for cost cutting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, in our minds, those that go against that tide, you know, there's almost no better time to be spending on marketing than when other people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So taking a look and saying, you know, investing in marketing, investing wisely in marketing, and is something that we see can be an added advantage when there's less competition for consumer mindshare out
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm. So, we haven't really talked about social media marketing, but I mean, that's an arena that has basically cut the cost of marketing and enabled marketers to reach people in a more direct way. So I would think that would be something that that retailers should be thinking about for their private label when they talk about marketing.
Social media is going to change marketing forever, John.
Mm-hmm.
And it's private label is no island of that influence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking those approaches, doing an electronic campaign can be a very cost-effective way of building momentum. You know,
mm-hmm.
whether it's through social media and using the traditional forms of Facebook and the like, should be a key consideration of the marketing mix of private brand ambassadors. So, couldn't agree more. It's changing. Just simply using traditional mediums like flyers and circulars and things of that nature isn't going to cut it in the future.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a good point to end on, looking ahead to the future and reminding our listeners they have to be thinking about all the options when it comes to marketing, not just the traditional ones that they may think are too expensive.
Yeah,
although, as you said, if they analyze it, they'll find that the cost may be worth it. Tell folks your email address. You mentioned that they can write you for that case study. What would
sure.
be the email address you'd like them to write you at?
It's P. Rodmell, P-R-O-D, M as in Mary, E-L-L, and then the at symbol, W-A-T-T-I-N-T-L, as in Watt, in the short form for international, .com. P. Rodmell at WattIntl.com.
Great. And I'm sure you'll be hearing from people on that. Thanks, Patrick, for joining us today. That's all the time we have. So let me thank you again and thank our listeners and invite them to listen to all our PL Buyer podcasts with Patrick and other industry leaders by visiting our website, privatelabelbuyer.com, where you can listen and download those. We'll also be doing podcasts from the upcoming PLMA show in November, and we're hoping to do video streaming from there as well. So keep an eye on privatelabelbuyer.com for all of that. And we'll be giving out our Design Excellence Awards at the show, and Patrick will be part of that, and we're looking forward to that as well. So thank you again, Patrick. Thanks to our listeners, and goodbye.